Today is Wednesday, January 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the United States and China have signed a so-called Phase 1 trade deal today. How will that affect the 18-month trade dispute on the world? Plus, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the managers for President Trump's impeachment trial.
So today, I'm very proud to present the managers. We'll bring the case, which we have great confidence in terms of impeaching the president and his removal.
We'll have all those stories and more all coming up on today's International Edition. After 18 months of economic combat, the United States and China took a step toward peace on Wednesday. Well, at least for now. Here's a little of what's going on in the White House as the signing ceremony is being streamed.
Henry Kissinger told me, "How did the president ever pull this off?" I said, "Can I quote Henry on that? Because Henry is outstanding. And when Henry's impressed with something, then I'm impressed. And Henry, we're impressed with you. Thank you very much for being here." Thank you, Henry. Thank you.
That was from the White House. President Donald Trump and China's chief negotiator, Liu He, signed a modest trade agreement in which the administration will ease some sanctions on China and Beijing will step up its purchases of U.S. farm products and other goods. President Trump also said he will visit China sometime in the not-too-distant future. Above all, the deal is supposed to defuse a conflict that has slowed global growth, hurt American farmers and manufacturers, and weighed on the Chinese economy. But the so-called Phase One pact does little to force China to make the major economic reforms, such as reducing unfair subsidies for its own companies, which the Trump administration sought when it started the trade dispute by imposing tariffs on Chinese imports in July of 2018. The U.S. has yet to reveal the details of the agreement, though U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer has said that they would be made public sometime today. But what has been the impact on the trade dispute on the global economy these past 18 months? For that, I spoke with Fred Bernstein, a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
The trade dispute has significantly disrupted the world economy and world trade. It has produced the first real trade war since the 1930s, with the U.S. applying tariffs to a wide range of goods from China, and China retaliating pretty much in kind. That has cut trade by double-digit percentages in both directions between the U.S. and China, and more importantly, it has generated great uncertainty in the economies of both countries and around the world. That has discouraged investment, discouraged global economic growth, and dampened the economic prospects. So the notion that we will now have at least a truce in that trade war is a big deal, should clear the decks for the world economy to progress more smoothly over the coming year.
Now, you talk about progressing rather smoothly over the coming year. What does that mean?
It means that economic growth, which probably would have been deterred by maybe a half percentage point a year on an ongoing trade war, will not happen. People can now breathe a sigh of relief, know that we will not have new trade barriers, which the U.S. had threatened if this agreement was not signed, and maybe even get a bit of relief from the trade barriers that have been posed over the last year. I don't say the decks are totally clear, because there will still be some uncertainties. There will be ongoing negotiations to try to deal with further and more fundamental issues, but at least the major dark clouds will be removed, and that will enable world growth to proceed at least a bit more forthrightly than without the agreement.
Now, there's been no set date for talks on the phase two. Does that ambiguity roll over to other effects that other nations, including the United States and China, may see in their trade moving forward?
There will be ongoing uncertainty in the overall economic relation between the U.S. and China. It's not just trade. There are technology conflicts. There are investment conflicts. There are potentially currency conflicts. The U.S. and China, who are the world's two economic superpowers, are going to be in a prolonged contest now for global economic supremacy global economic competition. So it's going to be a somewhat uncertain environment for the indefinite future. What this agreement does is take the roughest edges off it, eliminate at least for the short term the prospect of further increases in trade barriers, maybe some relaxation of what we've had over the past year or so, and therefore a truce, not a peace, not a solution, but a truce that at least permits the global economy to go forward without the worst effects of the trade war of the past 18 months.
That was Fred Bergsten with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. U.S. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi spoke to reporters announcing the names of the managers for the impeachment trial of U.S. President Donald Trump. Here are the managers. Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff is the lead manager. Judiciary Chair Jerry Nadler. House Administration Chair Zoe Lofgren. Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries. Congresswoman Val Demings. Congressman Jason Crow. And Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia.
The emphasis is on litigators. The emphasis is on comfort level in the courtroom. The emphasis is making the strongest possible case to protect and defend our Constitution, to seek the truth for the American people. I'm very proud and honored that these seven members, distinguished members, have accepted this serious responsibility.
The House is set to vote and to send the articles of impeachment against the president to the Senate for a landmark trial on whether the charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress are grounds for removal. After the midday Wednesday vote, the House managers will walk the articles across the Capitol in a dramatic procession later today. The White House responded by saying that President Trump has done nothing wrong. It will be the only third time in the presidential office has held been accountable for an impeachment trial in American history, a serious moment coming amid the backdrop of a politically divided nation and an election year. The TASS news agency reports that Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev submitted his resignation to President Vladimir Putin. Putin asked the members of Medvedev's cabinet to keep working until a new cabinet is formed. Medvedev's resignation followed Putin's annual State of the Nation address earlier today. During his speech, the Russian leader proposed amending the Constitution to increase the powers of the prime ministers and the cabinet members. The proposed move is seen as part of Putin's efforts to carve out a new position of power for himself to stay at the helm after his current term of president ends in 2024. Putin also proposed changing Russia's constitution to give the national legislation precedence over international treaties and rulings from international bodies in cases where they contravene Russia's own constitution. Brazilian indigenous leaders began a four-day tribal gathering in the Amazon on Tuesday to plan their opposition to far-right President Jair Bolsonaro's push to open their reservations for commercial mining and agriculture. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has more.
Leaders of Amazon tribes gathered this week to plan resistance to Brazil's far-right government. Ritual dances and flashes of colorful bird feathers kicked off a meeting to decide how to face President Bolsonaro's government. Bolsonaro is pushing to open their reservations to commercial mining and farming. And since he took office last year, illegal loggers and miners have stepped up invasions of protected tribal lands. That's seen a spike in deforestation, fires, and clashes on reservations. The week's tribal meeting is hosted by Raoni Metuktire, a well-known chief from the Kayapo tribe.
White man named Bolsonaro, take advantage of your term, because my fight is for an entire lifetime.
Chief Raoni became famous as a symbol for the environment in the 1980s after touring the world with musician Sting. Other leaders echoed his words.
The fight doesn't stop. The fight doesn't end. As long as we're alive, we're going to fight to preserve our culture and these beautiful customs that I saw here today.
Bolsonaro has vowed to integrate Brazil's 900,000 indigenous people into the wider economy while tapping the resources on their hundreds of reserves. Environmentalists say that could speed up clearing of the Amazon, the world's largest tropical rainforest, and what they say is a bulwark against climate change. A recent report in the O Globo newspaper said new draft legislation from Bolsonaro's government would open up reservations not only to mining, but also oil and gas, hydroelectric dams, and GMO crops banned by law on tribal lands. The newspaper says tribes would not have the power to veto projects decided by officials. Bolsonaro's government has declined to comment on the report.
That was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. China is using its economic and diplomatic leverage to silence critics abroad and undermine international human rights systems, according to the 2020 Human Rights Watch World Report. Researcher Yachi Wang and director Kenneth Roth said the report, which examines about 100 countries, claims that Beijing's efforts not only suppress the rights of its citizens, but extend far beyond its borders. VOA's Jesuseme Oni has more.
After an English Premier League player posted messages online criticizing China's policy towards its minority Uyghur Muslims, Beijing canceled the broadcast of his team's match, a warning shot from the league's most lucrative market. It's just one of the ways China is using its economic influence to suppress free speech worldwide, according to a Human Rights Watch report.
China has been harassing and intimidating any kind of activities and speeches that criticize China's human rights record in the UN. Around the world, in different countries, China has been censoring speech that criticize the Chinese government, using its economic and diplomatic leverage.
According to the Human Rights Watch 2020 World Report, China, under President Xi Jinping's leadership, has tightened its grip over sectors of society it found threatening, such as the internet, activists, and religious groups.
This is the most severe period of repression that we've seen in decades in China, probably going back to, you know, the Cultural Revolution or an era like that. Xinjiang is the worst, where, you know, a million or more Uyghur and Turkic Muslims are in detention for forced indoctrination, basically to pressure them to renounce Islam and their cultural traditions and even their language.
Kenneth Roth, executive director of the group, was barred Sunday from entering Hong Kong, where he planned to release this year's report. The Chinese government called it punishment for the group's support for pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong.
These groups tried by all means to instigate people to engage in extreme violent crimes, incite Hong Kong independence and separatist activities. These organizations are held responsible for the current unrest in Hong Kong and should be punished and pay their due prices.
Several countries have publicly criticized China for human rights violations, but stopped short of taking concrete measures against Beijing, including the West, where domestic issues like Brexit have diverted attention.
Traditionally, countries that have been strong human rights have not said enough about the human rights situations in China. And other countries who are authoritarian, autocratic themselves, because, as I said, the economic ties with China, they have been mum about, you know, the severe repression in Xinjiang and other human rights violations in China.
While the United States has imposed sanctions on some Chinese companies and officials tied to Chinese repression, rights advocates say U.S. President Donald Trump's embrace of President Xi Jinping and the U.S. policy of separating families at the U.S.-Mexico border have damaged U.S. credibility on human rights issues. Jesuseme Oni, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists in Chicago discovered the oldest solid material ever found on Earth, trapped inside a meteorite that fell in Australia 50 years ago. What they found are grains of stardust, microscopic remnants of stars that died billions of years ago that can go on to help form new stars, planets, or other objects like meteorites. The ancient bits of stardust are actually tiny grains of pre-solar silicon carbide that were created long before our sun formed 4.6 billion years ago. To determine the age of the stardust, the scientists measured its exposure to high-energy cosmic rays that fly through the galaxy. Using that dating technique, the researchers found the grains of stardust are between 4.6 to 7 billion years old. The scientists' findings were published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Israel's Army Intelligence says Iran will have enough enriched uranium to produce one nuclear bomb by the end of the year. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel will not let Iran become a nuclear power. Linda Gradstein has those details.
Israeli military analysts say that by the end of 2020, Iran will have enough enriched uranium for one nuclear bomb. The assessment comes after recent tensions between the U.S. and Iran brought them to the brink of war. The United States pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal in 2018, and Israeli intelligence officials speculated that Iran would resume its efforts to acquire a nuclear bomb. Israeli Army intelligence officials based their calculation on their assessment that it takes 40 kilograms of 90% enriched uranium for one nuclear bomb. Iran announced several months ago that it no longer considered itself bound by the nuclear deal and would step up enrichment efforts. At the same time, the Israeli assessment found that Iran does not possess missiles that can carry a nuclear bomb, and that as far as they know, Iran is not working on one. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued a harsh warning to Iran. He said that Israel knows exactly what is happening with the Iranian nuclear program and that Israel will not let Iran get a nuclear weapon. He also called on European states to impose new sanctions on Iran for breaching the nuclear deal. Meanwhile, Syrian state television said that Israeli aircraft fired missiles at the T-4 base near Damascus. The report said that Syrian air defense brought down a number of missiles, but that four hit the base, causing some damage but no casualties. Israeli officials did not comment on the report. Syria has accused Israel of hitting this same base several times in recent months. Israeli military sources said that Iranian forces and allied Shiite militias used the base, and that Iran used the base to transport precision weapons to Iranian-backed forces, including Hezbollah in Lebanon. I-24 News defense correspondent Adi Kaplowitz says Iran is continuing its efforts to deliver weaponry despite the U.S. targeted killing of Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani.
The taking down of Soleimani doesn't prevent the Iranians from continuing to try to reinforce their forces all over the region, including in Syria. We are already seeing a report that just 2 hours after the attack last night, another Iranian cargo plane landed in the T-4 airbase, showing that really it's very hard to prevent the Iranians from sending different sorts of equipment or weaponry all over the region.
In February of 2018, an Israeli F-16 was shot down during an attack on the T-4 base. It made it back to Israel before crashing. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani dismissed Wednesday a proposal for a new Trump deal aimed at resolving a nuclear dispute, saying that it was strange, that the offer was strange, and criticized U.S. President Trump for always breaking promises. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who has praised Trump as a great deal maker, called on Tuesday for the president to replace Iran's 2015 nuclear deal with major powers with his own pact to ensure Tehran does not get a nuclear weapon. Washington has rejected a request by the Iraqi government to pull out its troops and has threatened possible sanctions in response. U.S. troops are there to train local forces and fight the Islamic State terror group, according to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Some analysts have dismissed the Trump administration's threats just as rhetoric, but it has also been reported that possible sanctions are being drafted just in case. Analysts say sanctions against Iraq would wipe out any economic progress, however small, made over the past several years. They could also force Iraq to further align with U.S. rivals like Iran. Dale Gavlak has that story.
As U.S. troops clear rubble from a military base in western Iraq struck by Iranian missiles, many wonder how tensions will play out between the Iraqi government and the U.S. military following the U.S. killing of top Iranian commander Qasem Soleimani in Baghdad. Many Shiite lawmakers recently voted to expel U.S. forces from the country, and now Iraqi protesters have demanded the same, saying they are tired of being caught between the U.S. and Iran. Abbas Kadam heads the Washington-based Atlantic Council's Iraq Initiative. He says the U.S. killing of Soleimani and Iran's retribution, both on Iraqi soil, undermined its sovereignty.
The Iraqi government is not interested in the taking out the U.S. troops, more it's the pressures on the Iraqi government from Iran, from friends of Iran who are inside Iraq, mostly armed groups that do not necessarily obey the orders of the commander-in-chief of the Iraqi security forces, that's the prime minister. Prime Minister Adel Abdelmehdi appears leaving the troops in Iraq might put them in harm's way, whether it's an Iranian bombardment or whether it is a bombing by the armed groups inside Iraq.
Both Qadam and Jordanian analyst Osama El-Sharif underscore that it's not an easy situation to navigate because the U.S. also doesn't want to leave Iraq, but it may have to in a year.
Definitely the United States does not want to leave it as an easy prey for Iran. It will upset the whole geopolitical balance in the region, and it will send the Saudis and other Gulf countries looking for options. If they cannot rely on the United States as an ally, who can they rely on? Talking about China, Russia. It's a big vacuum if the United States is forced to leave.
Qadam warns that relations are tenuous. However, it would be best to negotiate behind closed doors rather than through the media to preserve both countries' interests.
If the U.S. complies and leaves and then slams Iraq with sanctions and crippling economic measures, then that will kill even the diplomatic relations. That would be a big loss for both countries.
Qadam says both sides need to buy some time in order to give both an exit strategy out of the current crisis without having a winner and a loser. Dale Geflek for VOA News, Amman.
Nearly 3,000 participants from 117 countries, 53 heads of state and government, and close to 1,700 business leaders will gather at next week's annual World Economic Forum in the plush Swiss Alpine resort of Davos. Lisa Schlein reports that geopolitical crises, climate change, and the U.S.-China trade dispute will top the forum's large and challenging agenda.
The World Economic Forum is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year at a time of great uncertainty. The forum's founder and executive director, Klaus Schwab, warns the world is in a state of emergency and the window to act is quickly closing.
We do not want to face continued political and economic disintegration. We do not want to reach the tipping point of irreversibility on climate change. And we do not want that the next generations inherit a world which becomes ever more hostile and ever less habitable. Just think of the wildfires in Australia.
Schwab says no institution or individual alone can address the many economic, environmental, social, political, and technological challenges facing the world. He says only collaboration among leading players can do this. He adds the forum offers a platform in which leaders can seek such cooperation. Organizers of the forum expect a large number of young environmentalists, led by Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, to energize the climate change debate. Discussions about the de-escalation of hostilities and instability in the Middle East are expected to loom large during the week-long discussions. Key leaders, such as the President of Iraq and the President of Iraqi Kurdistan, as well as the Pakistani and Afghan presidents, will be attending. But Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has canceled his appearance because of uncertainty in the region and growing discontent in his country. Forum President Borge Brende tells VOA that President Donald Trump will be coming with a high-powered delegation. It includes Secretary of the Treasury Steven Mnuchin, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and current National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien.
I think there will be a lot of trusted discussions on trade, on security, on de-escalation, and I hope our platform can be a conducive one for securing a more safe and more prosperous 2020 than we saw in 2019.
President Trump is scheduled to arrive at the opening of the forum's 50th anniversary celebration next Tuesday. Brende says Trump will deliver an opening speech in which he will share his good wishes for the world and the United States of America. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer PJ Elliott, thank you very much for joining us today. You can visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. And you can also find archived copies of this show on our program page under the Live Radio tab. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.
What's up, up?